Hi, this is Ernie Fazio. The show is Earnestly Speaking. I'm talking to David Colon. He is a man who is aspiring to be a U.S. congressman. He'll be running in a primary, I guess it is, in the on the East End. And I wanted to talk to David about some of the responsibilities of being a congressman. In the first segment, we talked about the help that we need to make for business. In other words, the research, development, the infrastructure, that sort of thing. I want to talk to you, David, this time about what is the responsibility of a congressman when it comes to international affairs? For example, this morning we announced that there would be an Iran pact on nuclear things. Now, we don't know what's in that, but we, right. You know, we should be rejoicing that something is being done. And I was wondering, do you think that you have a big responsibility there, or is it something that is kind of above the pay grade?
No, I think, you know, the strength of our country is critically important to for members of Congress to be aware of and advocating for. The strength of our country obviously comes from our military force, but also from the strength of our people and the strength of our economy. So it all ties together in terms of providing us the overall strength that we show to the world. In terms of the deal with Iran, like you said, it was just announced in the last hour or so, and I've just read the headlines as you have, and I think it remains to be seen whether that's a good deal or not. I think we need to be inherently skeptical of making any deal with people who seem to chant "Death to America" as part of their national anthem. So I will certainly look at that deal and see what the particulars are. But I think that we need to look at it with a skeptical eye, you know, as a mindset.
I was talking to a man on this radio show last week who is an American citizen, but he's spent time in the military of Israel. And he was a security expert in Israel. And I said to him, I said, do you think that the fear of Israel is the fact that Iran is very large, very inherently wealthy, pretty well educated, and could be a juggernaut of a business competitor with Israel? Is that part of their problem? And he just looked at me and says, could be. You know, yep. You have to look at these things. They have so many facets to sure. them. And that's a very difficult thing to discern as to what the motivation of Iran is at this moment. Did I give you an insight that you may not have had?
Well, I appreciate that, certainly hearing that perspective. I mean, I think the bottom line is we need to know who our friends are. And our friends in that area is Israel. And I think we need to do what we need to do to protect Israel. It's the only democracy in the Middle East. It's obviously a close ally of our country. That doesn't mean we need to, you know, we can't disagree with Israel sometimes, but that means that we need to put as a priority the protection of Israel and the protection of our relationship with Israel. Now, we'll see what the deal says. I mean, the idea behind the deal is, my understanding, is to help reduce the impact of the risk against Israel with regard to reducing Iran's ability to enrich uranium. But some of the reports I saw said that would only restrict that for a certain number of years. Well, what happens when that time period ends? So there's, in my mind, far more questions than answers at this point, and we'll have to discuss that. I know I'm I was named this year a Truman National Security Fellow. I've been involved with foreign policy, particularly in the law enforcement side of things, when I was at the Justice Department, strongly believe that America has an important role to play in the world as a leader, both militarily, but also using what we call our soft power, which is our economic power, to help build up troubled spots. I mean, I think America has a role to play in helping to reduce tension by helping improve the economies, for instance, in places that are troubled. And by focusing on both our military power and our soft power, we have, you know, overall a stronger projection as a country. Now, that said, those are the kinds of issues we talk about and are working on at the Truman national security project, which, like I said, I'm a part of.
You know, the two major foreign policy coups that we produced was the Marshall Plan and the Peace Corps. Neither one of them required a rifle. Mm-hmm. The Marshall Plan was the most unlikely thing in the world to get done. It was $50 billion at a time when $50 billion was probably more in like a half a trillion today. And that had to get through Congress. And Bill Clinton was talking about that at the LIA one day. And you know how you have the rope line and you get to talk to them for, say, a second, you know, and you shake his hand? Well, I said to him, I says, I know you said that the Marshall Plan was one of the greatest things we've ever done. I said, you know why it was called the Marshall Plan? He says, of course. He says, it was named after George Marshall. I said, yeah, that's true. I says, but there's more to the story than that. I says, when Truman called in Dean Acheson and George Marshall into the office, he said, we're going to win this war. And when we win this war, we're going to have the same problem we had after the First World War. Europe is a mess. What are we going to do about it? He says, we have to have a plan. So he says, you guys are going to come back with a plan. So they came back with a plan, and they presented it to Truman. And Truman said, okay, I like it. He says, there, well, sir, there it is, the Truman Plan. And Truman says, if you ever want to get this thing to go anywhere, you better call it something else. You better call it the Acheson Plan or the Marshall Plan or the Acheson-Marshall Plan. I don't care what you call it, but it ain't the Truman Plan because it'll never get through Congress. My ratings are around 16%. So Acheson said to the president, we'll call it the Marshall Plan because he did most of the work. Clinton says to me, is that true? I says, I don't know. I make crap up. And then I told him where I got the information. Go ahead.
I think the Marshall Plan is an example of the kind of, you know, America's other kind of power, which is not necessarily our military might, but using the other strength we have, which is our economy and our know-how and our, you know, our capitalist system to move other regions forward in a way that helps, at the end of the day, what matters most, which is American security. And so, you know, going back to the Iran deal, you know, again, the devil is in the details, but I am, you know, I think we need to look at that with a very skeptical eye. In terms of American leadership around the world, I think we need to not only have our military force projection, which we certainly have, but also have our other tools.
I'm going to float an idea to you, and you can tell me if you think it's all wet. First of all, Congress should never have be bypassed when we have a war. You should be the guys who sign on the bottom line and say, yes, we have a war. The president should never be able to say, yeah, we're going to have a war. You guys coming? You know, that's over as far as I'm concerned. It's in the Constitution. You guys have the power. You think I'm wrong? You think I'm all wet on this?
Well, I think there's a lot of nuance to it. I mean, the War Powers Act provides the president with authority in certain circumstances that are perhaps short of war to act when acting, when we need to act quickly and in limited ways. I think the president needs to maintain that authority, and I think that the president should maintain full authority so that our enemies don't know what we're going to do. And I thought it was a mistake for the president to come and come to the Congress and say, you know, I want to have these limitations on my power for these instances against ISIS. I would have preferred, I think, to see the president maintain the full range of options.
I don't want to hear that, David, and I'll tell you why. You got to have the nerve to say, I'm in charge. You are in charge as the Congress. You have the power.
When it comes to wars, I absolutely agree with that. I think with regard to limited instances, limited strikes, limited operations, I think the president needs to have some authority and flexibility to move and act quickly. And I think that's what the War Powers Act provides him with.
I'm going to float one other idea.
Okay.
Because the Peace Corps and the Marshall Plan were so successful, why don't we have an economic strike force or an emergency strike force when we have, let's say, a tsunami, and we move people automatically. We just say, you give us the word, we're done. We're in flight. We're going to be there to help the people. I think that would do more for the peacemaking of this world than anything that a bullet can do. A bullet can never do it.
Sure. I mean, I think the United States military and government have been very, very supportive of.
You can adopt any idea I give
thank
you.
Thank you. I'm going to nominate you to run for Congress, Ernie. But I think the military and our government, look what we did in Haiti, right? I mean, part of that was the U.S. government stepping up and the military providing critical assistance to the people of Haiti, but also the private sector just stepped in through the Bush-Clinton Foundation and the efforts, and that was tremendous success. And I think it shows what's possible when we use the power of the federal government along with the private sector to get things done, not only internationally, but perhaps most importantly, we need to use those tools at home. And that's what I look forward to working on.
Thank you. This is Ernie Fazio, and the show is Earnestly Speaking. I'm talking to David Colon. He'll be running for Congress, and he was giving us some of his ideas on what he might do. It's been a pleasure talking to you, David.
Thank you.
And I thank you for coming in. Again, this is Earnestly Speaking, and LI News Radio.